What was it like to grow up in a land considered the place of no return? Peter Conrad, a writer and teacher of literature at Oxford, grew up in Tasmania, an Australian island south of the mainland. England used Australia as a penal colony for its most hardened criminals. The outcasts of Australia were exiled to Tasmania, which Conrad describes as the place of ultimate banishment and estrangement. Growing up, Peter Conrad dreamed of getting off the island. He did, but he went back years later to face the past he tried so hard to leave behind. His memoir, Behind the Mountain, is the story of his return.
About halfway through my life, at least I hope my sums are right, I began to wonder about what I had lost. At the time, I hadn't so much lost it as thrown it away, with a negligence I considered cool. When I left home at the age of 20, it was without a backward glance. First went two tea chests, shipping my books to England. What remained I carried in endless relays out to the rusted incinerator in our yard between the fragrant compost heap and the stilted avenues of beans. There, scrutinized by neighbors pausing at their kitchen windows as they did the washing up, I set fire to all the leavings of my life so far. Diaries and exercise books, bundles of letters tied by string, anything that might incriminate me by attaching an identity to me. The cruel cleanness of it now amazes me. But at that age, it's easy to cremate a portion of your life. You don't believe in memory and so can have no affections. Thus, I loaded the funeral pyre with the attributes of a self I was to regard from now on, I thought, as irrelevant, the discarded first draft of a person.
When you were burning that first part of your life in the big funeral pyre, what were you about to do in your life?
About to travel with the books, which I salvaged, to Oxford to take up a Rhodes Scholarship. And I looked upon that as really the beginning of my life. This was just kind of prelude. And since all of my imaginary life so far, all of my imagined life had been lived in England and lived inside the English books that I'd been reading, I regarded this as just a sort of strange exile, which I had finally been rescued from.
But you didn't really grow up in England. You grew up in Tasmania, which you'd describe as, you say Australia had been a place for banishment, and Tasmania had been a place of internal exile.
Mm-hmm. It was the place to which the convicts who had been sent to the Australian mainland were banished if they proved such hardened offenders that they offended again once they arrived in the penal colony. And it was a place which was regarded, for geographical reasons, as a natural penitentiary. It was a place cast away at the very bottom of the earth from which there was simply no escape. And this fairly black, bleak past is something that impends on everyone who grows up there in some way, I think. I mean, we've just wandered around on the little island looking out across these oceans, hoping that someday someone might come and take us away. And in my case, it was Cecil Rhodes who intervened with a scholarship and took me away.
How did your parents end up in Tasmania? How did your family get there?
I'm not quite sure, and I don't think they're sure either. They indignantly deny, both of them, that they were sent there in shackles and chains, although now it's quite chic to have a convict ancestor in the family in these days of bicentennial patriotism. But I think they migrated there, both families, from impoverished backgrounds, one in England, the other in Germany at the end of the 19th century. But such is the sort of sadness and moodiness of the place, and also such is the kind of contagious guilt that people feel in the place about the past, that all traces, all of family history have sort of been wiped out. It's not something that anyone chooses to talk about for fear that something unpleasant or something unhappy will be uncovered. I mean, there's no great optimistic saga of emigration to Tasmania as there is to the United States. It's a place where people are sent under duress, where they go in misery, and which they don't care to remember the reasons for their arriving in.
So the guilt comes from the fact that a lot of the settlers in Tasmania were convicts, and also that the settlers there wiped out most of the aboriginals who lived there.
Yes, yes. The first sort of pastoral settlers, the first English people who went out to set up little rural estates found to their chagrin that there were no foxes to hunt as they had done in the mother country. So they hunted aboriginals instead, and within 30 or 40 years, this race, which was a quite unique and peculiar race, separated from the Stone Age Australian aborigines, rather more Polynesian and also rather more developed and civilized, within 30 or 40 years it had simply been wiped out. So that there's a lot of grim history to be forgotten in that little place.
It must be interesting to grow up in a place that most people know nothing about. I mean, when you left Tasmania and you went to England to go to school and then you lived in New York for a while before moving back to England, how much did your friends know about where you were from?
Absolutely nothing. In England, they mostly assumed that Tasmania had something to do with New Zealand, since they knew it was an island, and they assumed that it was probably the third island of New Zealand. In this country, I've often been mistaken for a native of Tanzania. It's a funny place to grow up in, because you have to constantly explain to people where it is. It's also proved to be a convenient place to pretend that people grew up in. I mean, I was immensely heartened when I was growing up there myself to learn from some movie magazine that I read that Merle Oberon had been born in Tasmania. It was not that I had any adolescent crush on Merle Oberon, but I found this news infinitely exciting because I thought, well, if Merle Oberon was born here, then it proves that one can be born here but still get out and become someone. Fortunately, it wasn't until much later on that I learned that Merle Oberon had never been anywhere near Tasmania, and she was just assigned Tasmania as a birthplace, quite arbitrarily, by the Hollywood publicists in the 30s who wanted to conceal the fact that she was actually Eurasian. So it's like kind of birth in limbo, in a way. I mean, it's not a place which is taken very seriously, even by the Australians on the mainland. In the 19th century, when Tasmania was called Van Diemen's Land after the Dutch navigator who first discovered it, its natives, when they went to the mainland carrying this kind of bloody penal past with them, were referred to either as the Van Diemonians or else, even more succinctly, as the Demons. So it's a place which people are accustomed to apologizing for coming from.
What do you think of the Crocodile Dundee movies and the Paul Hogan Come to Australia advertisements that we see so much on television now? You're from Tasmania and not the mainland of Australia, but they're right near each other and they have very similar histories.
Oh, yes, and the whole Crocodile Dundee persona has very much been taken up by Tasmanian bushmen. I describe in the book being taken around one of the logging camps by a tour guide who'd been assigned to me, whose whole persona was modelled on Crocodile Dundee. I think it's kind of deplorable, because just at the moment when Australia seemed about to escape from a mythology imposed on it by one empire, by the British Empire, it now seems to have accepted a very American notion of itself as, you know, a kind of extradited bit of the American frontier. And Crocodile Dundee is nothing more than an American backwoodsman, a kind of Natty Bumppo character from American mythology, who's been transposed down there and who enables Americans to feel that Australia is a good place because it's a bit of unspoiled America. Somehow or other, Australia, which entered the world so late and was so cast away from the rest of the world, is still having tremendous problems arriving at an image of itself and only sees itself still as the distorted reflection of places elsewhere.
Your book, Behind the Mountain, is a result of your trip back to Tasmania. Why did you go back?
Because I'd begun to brood about it more and more. I guess it was a terrible incipient sign of middle age that I left at the age of 20 for about the next 15 years. I was so excited by the new life that I was having in England or in the United States that I didn't look over my shoulder at all and thought I'd completely outgrown it. I guess it has something to do with the getting of wisdom or the arrival of middle age, that in the middle of my 30s I began to brood more and more about this, to dream more and more about it, to become more and more intrigued by it and more aware that it was the most formative place for me. It was the place that had made me, the place which was still dictating the scenario of my dreams, and a place which I couldn't afford any longer to pretend that I hadn't come from.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you.